Amidst the Yenukitsa case, Stalin, Kaganovich, and Sergo attended the birthday party of Svetlana's beloved nanny at Stalin's apartment. Everyone was filled with excitement and optimism because the great Moscow Metro, a magnificent Soviet showpiece with marble halls like palaces, had just opened. Its creator, Kaganovich, had just brought 10 tickets for Svetlana, her aunts and the bodyguards to ride the metro. Suddenly, Stalin, encouraged by Zhenya and Maria, decided he would go too. This change of plan provoked a commotion among Stalin's courtiers, which is hilariously described in Maria's diary. They became so nervous at this unplanned excursion that even the premier was telephoned. Almost half the ruling Politburo was involved within minutes. All were already sitting in their limousines when Molotov scurried across the courtyard to inform Stalin that such a trip might be dangerous without preparation. Kaganovich, the most worried of all, went pale, and suggested they go at midnight when the metro was closed, but Stalin insisted. 3 limousines of magnates, ladies, children and guards sped out of the Kremlin to the station, dismounted and descended. Once they arrived on the platform, there was no train. One can only imagine Kaganovich's frantic efforts to find one fast. The public noticed Stalin and shouted compliments. Stalin became impatient. When a train finally arrived, the party climbed aboard to cheers. They got out at Akhatny Riad to inspect the station. Stalin was mobbed by his fans, and Maria almost crushed against a pillar, but the NKVD finally caught up with them. Vasily was frightened, Maria noticed, but Stalin was jovial. Then Stalin decided to go home, changed his mind, and got out at the Arbat, where there was another near riot before they all got back to the Kremlin. Vasily was so upset by the whole experience that he cried on his bed and had to be given valerian drops. The trip marked another decline in relations between the leaders and the Svanitsa and Alleluyev ladies. Kaganovich was furious with the women for persuading Stalin to travel on the metro without any warning. He hissed at them that he would have arranged the trip if only they had given him some notice. The family began to feel that we were just poor relations, said Kira Alleluyeva. That's how they made us feel. As for Beria, the family, with fatal misjudgment, made no bones of their dislike of him. The women interfered and gossiped in a way that Nadia never had. But in the stern Bolshevik world, and especially given Stalin's views on family, they went too far. Worse, the women pursued vendettas against each other. The photograph of the 1934 birthday party now caused another row that undermined Stalin's trust. When Sashiko, Maria Svanitsa's sister-in-law, stayed with him in Kuntsevo, she found the photograph on Stalin's desk and borrowed it in order to print up some copies, suggesting that these ladies regularly read the papers on Stalin's desk. Maria, who loathed Sashiko's brazen climbing, discovered this, warning Stalin, "You can't let her make a shop out of your house and start trading on your kind-heartedness." Sashiko was dropped, to Zhenya and Maria's delight. Yet they themselves took liberties. The Svanitsas still acted as if Yosef was their kind-hearted paterfamilias, not the great Stalin. When he invited them to join him for dinner after watching the Kirov Ballet, they badly miscalculated the time and did not arrive until almost midnight, when the ballet ended at 10. Stalin did not like to wait. They would pay for their tardiness. Stalin had loved his unscheduled metro ride, telling Maria how moved he was by the love of the people for their leader. The people need a Tsar, whom they can worship and for whom they can live and work. He had always believed that the Russian people are Tsarist. At various times he compared himself to Peter the Great, Alexander the First, and Nicholas the First. But he regarded Ivan the Grozny, Ivan the Terrible, as his true alter ego, his teacher, something he revealed constantly to comrades such as Molotov, Zhdanov, and Mikoyan, applauding Ivan's necessary murder of overmighty boyars. This raises the question of how his grandees could have claimed to be tricked by Stalin's real nature when he openly lauded a Tsar who systematically murdered his nobility. Now, in late 1935, he also began to reproduce some of the trappings of Tsardom. Sartorial splendor suddenly mattered again. When Stalin sent Bukharin on a trip to Paris, he told him, "Your suit is threadbare. You can't travel like that. Things are different with us now. You have to be well-dressed." Such was Stalin's eye for detail that the tailor from the Commissariat of Foreign Affairs called on Bukharin that afternoon. More than that, the NKVD had access to the latest luxuries, money and houses. "Permit me 60,000 rubles to buy cars for our NKVD workers," wrote Yagoda in a pink pen to Molotov on the 15th of June 1935. Interestingly, Stalin, in blue, and Molotov, in red, signed it, but reduced it to 40,000. But that was still a lot of Cadillacs. Stalin had already ordered that the Rolls-Royces in the Kremlin be concentrated in the special garage. Stalin had become a Tsar. Children now chanted, "Thank you, Comrade Stalin, for our happy childhood," perhaps because he now restored Christmas trees. But unlike the bejeweled Romanovs identified so closely with the old Russian village and peasantry, Stalin created his own special kind of Tsar, modest, austere, mysterious, and urban. There was no contradiction with his Marxism. Sometimes Stalin's loving care for his people was slightly absurd. In November 1935, for example, Mikoyan announced that Stalin was taking great interest in soap and had demanded samples, after which we received a special Central Committee decree on the assortment and composition of soap. Then Stalin moved from soap to lavatories. Khrushchev ran Moscow with Mayor Nikolai Bulganin, another rising star. Now Stalin summoned Khrushchev. "Talk it over with Bulganin and do something. People hunt around desperately and can't find anywhere to relieve themselves." It is hard to imagine either Hitler or even President Roosevelt investigating urinals or soap. The dim but congenial Voroshilov initiated another step deeper into the mire of Soviet depravity when he read an article about teenage hooliganism. He wrote a note to the Politburo saying that Khrushchev, Bulganin and Yagoda agree there is no alternative but to imprison the little vagabonds. "I don't understand why one doesn't shoot the scum." Stalin and Molotov jumped at the chance to add another terrible weapon to their arsenal for use against political opponents, decreeing that children of 12 could now be executed.